Hi guys, my name is Andrew Davidson, and welcome to History and Game. This is the story of the monk and the warrior. However, in this story, the monk is not a monk at all. He has no robe, he has no cross. He stands tall, nothing but 7 feet of pure muscle and flesh. And in this story, the warrior is no longer a warrior, but an ex-warrior. He is a bright and cunning man who, having fought alongside the king during the kingdom's third crusade, has abandoned his sword for the bow. After a chance encounter, the two men quickly begin a lifelong bromance, to use the parlance of our times. During the Middle Ages, the monk and the warrior formulated a notorious gang of radical insurrectionists that fought against and terrorized what they deemed to be a corrupt and oppressive government. Many years pass, and with the passing of time came the blackened robe of old age, and with old age came sickness. The warrior becomes deathly ill. The monk does all he can for the warrior, but his condition is severe, requiring more than the monk is able to provide. Eventually, the monk relocates the sickened warrior to a small borough located in West Yorkshire, where the warrior's health condition is treated by his aunt. The aunt has recently retired from a lifelong career in medicine and care. The warrior struggles, unable to retain his once and former state of health. The monk and the warrior spend a year living in West Yorkshire. The monk never leaves his friend's side, where he often falls sick with exhaustion or sadness. Okay, game off. In life, old age and time can fill your heart with forgiveness and grace. You become different. You change. As you grow older, you learn to let go and forgive those who have wronged you. As time passes, you become far more willing to swap all of your hatred for complete and utter grace through loving not only yourself, but your enemies too. Unfortunately, the robe of old age and the wristwatch of time have not led enemies of the monk and the warrior down such a path.
The wheel of the past turns.
During this time, the aunt is persuaded by their enemies to murder the sickened warrior. One day, while the monk is in the kitchen preparing the evening meal, the warrior is stabbed by the aunt. After stabbing her nephew, she becomes panicked. She is sickened with her action of violence. What hurts her the most is that after spending an entire life practicing the Hippocratic Oath, which opening line states, "First and foremost, thou shalt do no harm," after all the years dedicated to increasing her patient's quality of life, instead, the warrior's aunt has sought bloodshed. The warrior is covered with blood, along with the knife, the adjacent wall, and the aunt's clothing. She breaks into tears and, in a fit of embarrassment, takes off with complete reckless abandonment towards the estate's back entrance. And just like a bat out of hell, the aunt is gone. With the last of his strength, the warrior blows his horn, summoning aid from his longtime friend. The monk quickly returns to find the warrior bleeding into his bedside window. However, there is nothing the monk can do but offer comfort. The warrior grabs his bow, along with a single arrow, and without aim, knocks and fires an arrow out the window, over the stone fence, and somewhere into the adjoining field. Before slipping off his mortal coil, the warrior makes one final request. He requests that the monk bury his bones wherever the final arrow has landed. With nothing left but love and loyalty, the monk fulfills the warrior's final request. Blaming himself for the death of the warrior, the monk spends the last few years of his guilt-stricken life sitting in a field next to the warrior's final resting place. To this day, a small tombstone can still be found in West Yorkshire's Kirklees Park, about a bow shot away from a building with a silver placard that reads, "Dedicated to the legendary friendship of Little John and Robin Hood, the monk and the warrior." This is the story of the fiction and the truth. I identify as a hobby gamer. I identify as a root beer connoisseur. I identify as an individual who hates communism, but extremely dislikes capitalism as well. And finally, I've saved the best for last. I identify as an anti-Stratfordian, a downtrodden, disregarded, and sparse community of individuals ranging from literary greats such as Walt Whitman and Mark Twain to superstar entertainers like Tom Hardy and Robin Williams. R.I.P. Anti-Stratfordians subscribe to the theory of alternative authorship in regards to the works of the great bard William Shakespeare. In Season 2, Episode 3 of History and Game, Imposter Syndrome and the Man from Stratford, I discuss in further detail the anti-Stratfordian movement. Well, since I know time is a precious commodity meant to be spent playing games rather than digging around some old podcast, let me take a moment to catch you up. In short, yes, the plays and poems attributed to William Shakespeare from 1564 to 1616 are pieces of literary history. And yes, a man named William Shakespeare from Stratford did exist. I do not argue as to the historical existence of the Stratford man, but no, the man was not the author of such profound literary works. In his book, Players, The Mysterious Identity of William Shakespeare, Bertram Fields writes, "Most of the literate world thinks of the author as the bearded, balding man from Stratford-upon-Avon. Yet some very competent and credible people have questioned this, contending that the vast body of diverse knowledge demonstrably possessed by the author of Shakespeare's works was simply not available to William Shakespeare of Stratford, who had a grade school education at best, and appeared to have had difficulty writing anything, including his own name. One cannot deny that the wisdom and humanity expressed within such perception and elegance in the poems and plays can't be reconciled or explained with what we now know about the crass and selfish drunken behavior of William Shakespeare, the man from Stratford." Okay, so do I believe in anti-Stratfordian theory? Yeah, I do. Am I willing to listen to Stratfordian arguments? Sure, why not? Bring them on. Am I going to go out of my way to belittle those arguments? Not really, no. I guess I'm not a die-hard and dedicated anti-Stratfordian. Shucks. Honestly, just between me and your two earballs, I couldn't care less. In fact, part of the theoretical appeal, to me anyway, is the fun of believing in something that goes beyond what your high school English teacher taught you. Something that makes you open your mind. Because, let's face it, sometimes forgetting about the fog of fiction and the clarity of reality is just more gosh darn fun than the banality of truth. Am I right? This is the story of The Robin and the Hood, Part 1. There is a philosophical saying not nearly as popular as, "If a tree falls in the woods and no one is around, does it make a sound?" Or, how could I forget, "What is the sound of one hand clapping?" Well, this lesser-known saying goes something like this. "Seeing a spider in your room isn't scary. it's scary when it disappears. Sometimes it's not what we know, but what we think we might know that bothers us. When the historicity rug is yanked out from underneath us, is the story then drop-kicked into a world of insignificance? Okay, so point of order. What if I told you that the story of the monk and the warrior is absolute bunk? What if I told you that the story is a combination of fiction and folklore? Do you value truth over fiction? And how can a podcast literally called History and Game serve its audience a story of pure historical fiction? Would it matter? Or does it matter? Or as they say in the world of journalism, is the story the thing? Are empirical stories more effective than fictional ones? Mark Twain, one of my buddies and fellow anti-Stratfordians, once wrote that truth is stranger than fiction, but it is because fiction is obliged to stick to possibilities, while truth isn't. But why? Why do humans have the proclivity to understand the truth? Fictional stories present a level of narrativity while simultaneously catapulting its audience into a world where possibility trumps probability. But you see, fiction needs to make sense. Regardless of what your college creative writer taught you, fictional stories are, more often than not, filled with more laws and logic than reality. We like stories because they summarize the universe in ways that fit our understanding. Truth doesn't follow a logical need to make sense, like fiction stories do. Don't believe me? Well, let me show you. Example number one. In 1585, Sir Walter Raleigh established the first permanent colony in North America. The colony was given the name Roanoke. 5 years later, in 1590, a relief mission stumbled upon the Roanoke colony, only to find the entire place quiet, unkempt, and completely abandoned. Somehow, in 5 years, a colony of 1,587 people disappeared like a fart in the wind, never to be seen again. The bizarre incident at Roanoke cannot be explained through rationality, logic, and empiricism. No footprints were found leading away from the colony. If they had wandered off, well, where did they end up? If they died from the plague, where were their bodies? Example number two. The Bermuda Triangle is a southwestern part of the Atlantic Ocean. The triangle stretches in a three-point pattern from the island of Bermuda down to the Florida Keys and over to a section of Puerto Rico. In the 1800s, interested parties began officially recording incidents within the triangle. Wow, so who knows the Bermuda Triangle's body count previous to the 1800s? Not only do we not know, but all the innovation and technology in the world is ineffective. We are doomed to never know. However, since the 1800s, 15 ships, 10 aircrafts, and a single Bermuda Island lighthouse have disappeared into the upside down. Women, children, pilots, and captains all disappeared along with their vessel. Now, let me be perfectly clear. Disappeared, okay? Not lost, not misplaced, not recovered 2 days later. Disappeared. Savvy? To quote Doc Brown from Back to the Future, they're erased from existence. Truth is stranger than fiction. Not everything in the world can be reasoned away. Sometimes it's easier to open yourself to the ideas of a supernatural colony and that the Bermuda Triangle has a phenomenon living inside of it. And hey now, just because Robin Hood is folklore doesn't mean he's forbidden from being real inside our hearts. It doesn't mean that his heroic adventures can't motivate and inspire us. As I write this episode of History and Game, I have one central thesis in mind. How much does the human race value truth over fiction? Follow-up question, is there any good reason? Follow-up question, is there any good reason to deny all logic by disregarding the truth and embracing the fiction? Why do people feel compelled to disregard the life of Robin Hood just because his life lacks historical realism? I don't know. Why do people care so damn much about who wrote Romeo and Juliet that they're willing to argue on every platform, from Reddit forums to academic journals and everything in between? This is the story of the Robin and the Hood, part 2. Sometimes we gamers often don't see the wealth of games within a specific theme. Okay, Cthulhu, superheroes, zombies, done to death. But take James Bond, for example. You'd be surprised how many Bond games are part of the gaming zeitgeist. It wasn't until I began looking for a game to review that I stumbled upon a plethora of Robin Hood-themed games. The upside? I had the luxury of options, and if I've learned anything in life, it's good to have options. The downside? Well, I hadn't the foggiest idea which one to pick. Let's see, there's Robin Hood and the Merry Men by Final Frontier Games, Rescuing Robin Hood by Castillo Games, Sherwood Bandits by Ludus Magnus Studios, Sheriff of Nottingham and its expansion by Arcane Wonders, and Uri Rosenberg's Robin of Locksley by Rio Grande Games, you know, just to mention a few. So how on earth do I pick just one? Well, after a grand total of 5 minutes developing a complex and fair selection system, I said nuts to this and decided to go with my most recently played Robin Hood themed game called The Adventures of Robin Hood. And here we go. Designed by Michael Menzel and published in 2021 by Cosmos Games, The Adventures of Robin Hood is a cooperative campaign and storytelling game for 2 to 4 players. First off, I'm quite familiar with the designer's body of work. Unlike the non-existent Robin Hood, Menzel wears many hats. While working on the Legends of Andor quadrilogy, Menzel worked as the designer, illustrator, narrative author, chief of operations, and producer. At the time of this recording, I have played through the entire original Andor trilogy, with the next game in the series sitting on my shelf of games yet to be played, along with about a dozen others. The struggle is real. Hey, you fellow diehard hobby gamers know of that which I speak, eh? Anyway, oh yes. Andor is a cooperative, narrative-driven fantasy game series that offers players more of a cooperative puzzle than an Amerithrash and hack-and-slash style of gameplay. According to BGG, in The Adventures of Robin Hood, players take on the role of Robin Hood and his companions, with the action taking place on a living game board with no set paths. The board changes over the course of each adventure, and the movement of the characters is handled via an innovative mechanism that uses different length wooden character pieces. Various actions and secrets are integrated into the game levels and are revealed only in the course of the story. The game board remembers what players have already explored or found. And thanks to the special materials, the entire game can be set up and dismantled quickly. The game tells the story of Robin Hood, and depending on the decisions the players make, the story changes, for better, for worse. This is the story of the good news and the bad news. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another rendition of History and Games, Good News, Bad News. Patent pending. Good news! The game is played on an oversized double-layered board where certain aspects change by punching them out. Think of it as like an advent calendar in the shape of a game board. This is how the board, quote-unquote, remembers what's been discovered based on either player choice or the game's episodic narrative structure. Now, I'm sure you're listening to this thinking exactly what I thought before playing The Adventures of Robin Hood. An advent calendar board game? There ain't no way in Hades that a unique element like that can function, let alone be exciting. Okay, I get it. I do. However, contrary to my better sense, not only does the game board function, but it creates an element of excitement, hence why it's discussed under the good news category. Good doy. Everyone knows that a good narrative-driven campaign game provides players with a sense of discovery. This is because discovery creates not only dynamic gameplay, but wraps players in a burrito-sized tortilla of engagement and interest. Bad news. The Adventures of Robin Hood relies on a point-to-point movement system. This type of movement is wildly popular among miniature games such as Fantasy Flight Games' Star Wars Armada. Ugh, and I hate it so much. Each player color comes with three movement pieces, a short, medium, and long. A player moves their character around the game board by lining up a movement piece and transferring their meeple from its current spot to the end of the aligned piece. While the character meeple cannot travel over trees, rocks, rivers, houses, castles, carriages, animals, or people, it can move shorter than the movement piece allows. Wow, exciting. Get out the party whistles because I am happier than a shark in a shipwreck, I tell you what. While this type of measured movement system may not bother the average Joe gamer, it's a system I've never really enjoyed. Not in other games, not in this game, not ever. And why? I mean, not only is it a thematic way of approaching character movement, but it alleviates having a grid of squares or hexes printed into the artwork. I think, for me, the whole measured movement system turns the game into a dross experience. I feel like a tailor, constantly holding up my measuring piece, figuring out where I want to move, how I can move, and how many turns it'll take me to get there. So, unfortunately, in contrast, I actually regard this movement mechanism as more of a theme killer than a theme enhancer. Good news! The measuring system of movement is finicky and I hate it. However, the game's special options of movement, they can be quite fun. Characters can jump from the forest floor to a tree bridge, from a tree bridge to another tree bridge, or jump from a tree bridge back down to the forest floor. Now, some gamers may find the introduction of a third-dimensional game on a two-dimensional board problematic, but for me, It was the only thing I enjoyed regarding movement. Besides, on a scale from bubble wrap to cool side of the pillow, how satisfying is it to climb above the forest floor and drop down on your enemies? It's as satisfying as replacing wet and cold socks with clean, fresh, and dry ones. Yeah, you heard me. It feels that good. Bad news. Due to the Advent Calendar game board and strong sense of discovery, well, sorry there, Sailor. Unfortunately, The Adventures of Robin Hood is a consumable game. When you're done, you are done. Good news! The game's narrative comes inside a fancy schmancy hardcover book. Kudos on presentation. Additionally, the narrative offers a heart-healthy amount of decision points and branching narrative paths. Bad news. The game's narrative is predictable at best. It's the story of Robin Hood, okay? Need I say any more? Anyone with a rudimentary knowledge of Robin Hood will understand what the story does and where it's going, thus reducing the narrative's element of discovery. This is the story of the onion and the game. Someone once said that board games are a lot like onions. You'll never know if they stink until you open them up. Well, I'd like to augment the phrase by adding that while some gamers find the smell of onions unpleasant, other gamers can find the smell quite gratifying. Different strokes for, you know, different folks. Okay, so in past episodes, I always give the game either a strong recommendation or a vehement disapproval. This game is absolutely fantastic! Everyone needs to go out of their way and buy it. Or, this game is purebred trash, and everyone from gamers to civilians need to avoid it at all costs. In reviewing The Adventures of Robin Hood, I give you the podcast's first ever ambiguous review. Pazalustia, de nada, je vous en prie, and you're welcome. Family-friendly games are, as you know, hard to come by. Sure, there are games like Stuffed Fables, Forbidden Waters, and Aftermath, but family campaign games are just a drop in a pond swimming with tons and tons of other games. The Adventures of Robin Hood is recommended for ages 10 and above. Each game session takes around an hour to play. The game is fairly simplistic and, akin to the Andor series, comes with a solid prologue or tutorial chapter. This makes Mendel's latest offering, you know, a good family game. The Adventures of Robin Hood is incredibly easy to learn, easy to play, the gameplay accommodates younger players, and the game duration is short enough to squeeze in an evening session even after all the kids have completed their homework for the night. However, if you're a high-key gamer in search of the next campaign game you can really sink your teeth into, this game is probably not worth your time. It's no Awaken Realms game, let me tell you what. In the narrative-driven campaign game category, I would probably recommend more than a dozen better games. But hey, listen, at the end of the day, do you need to buy The Adventures of Robin Hood? No, probably, not really. But if you enjoy the theme, like the movement system, and looking for something to bring the family to the table, well, hell's bells, this game just might be for you. Much like my stance as an anti-Stratfordian, I approach the validity of Robin Hood and his merry band of friends with the same hood-up, head-down, laissez-faire attitude. History in game is a narrative podcast dedicated to bringing your historical games to life. The podcast provides historical context through a deeper understanding of the time period, people involved, and events represented within the game's framework. The second half provides an unorthodox review on a game with a historical theme. And yet, this episode, the one you're listening to right now, contains 0.0 history. None. Nada. The story of the monk and the warrior is nothing more than folklore. Never happened. Furthermore, The Adventures of Robin Hood is not even a historical game. Hell, it's not even based on anything that even remotely happened. The 1590 disappearance at Roanoke, the lost ships and aircraft in the Bermuda Triangle, these are bona fide events from history where believing a fictional assumption regarding the two is far more fun than diving into your sock drawer and wrestling with the mysteries of the world for days. Let's stop and take a moment, shall we? Look inward. Can you learn to embrace the nebulous magic of these places? If not, then ask yourself, how important is valuing the truth over fiction at any and all costs? And more importantly, what would happen if you learned to just let go? As for me, well, I choose to spend my time with Mark Twain, Robin Williams, and Robin Hood as we skip through the never-ending Sherwood Forest located just behind my pale blue eyes. You don't believe me? Come closer. Do you see? My name is Andrew Davidson. I hope I have given you something to think about.